On this Christmas Eve, we thought we'd revisit a story which hit home for a number of our listeners and me. It's about adoption, which has had a troubled history in the United States. For decades during the mid-20th century, millions of unwed mothers were sent away to have their babies in secrecy and shame. Those babies were often given to couples in closed adoptions, which meant that birth mother and child would lose their shared history permanently. Journalist Gabrielle Glazer told the story of one such family in her book, American Baby. It followed Margaret Earle and her biological son David, who was born in 1961. We spoke with Gabrielle Glazer when the book first came out in January, and I asked what led to Margaret getting separated from her baby.
Well, Margaret got pregnant out of wedlock, and in those days it was actually illegal to have premarital sex in New York State. And her baby was taken from her by a very predatory adoption system that existed in New York, but also existed nationwide.
She and her boyfriend, George, who would later become her husband, were actually in love. I mean, they were committed to each other, but that didn't matter, did it?
No, it didn't. And despite their best efforts, they did everything they could to try to stay together. They eloped. They tried to convey their fitness as young parents to social workers in New York City, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter to the system, and it didn't matter to their parents either.
And so Margaret was sent away to a place that was, I mean, frankly, it sounded very unpleasant. Tell me about this home for unwed mothers that she went to.
The maternity home was a large old estate that was repurposed to house dozens of girls at any time. They were really kept under lock and key. Their diaries were read, their outgoing letters were read, their incoming letters were read. They had a strict regimen of chores to which each pregnant girl was assigned. They were watched as if they were toddlers at a preschool.
And when the baby finally came, they were taken to the hospital. They were forced to sign these papers. And then, I mean, the records were sealed. Once Margaret and those other girls let go of that baby, it was by design that she and others would never know what happened to her son.
Yes, absolutely. This was a system that had been established pretty much nationwide in the 20s and 30s. You would seal an original birth certificate and then issue an amended birth certificate that listed the child's new name and his adoptive parents as his original mother and father. And the theory was that it would protect the child from the taint of illegitimacy, protect the mother from the legacy of her alleged wantonness, but most importantly, it would protect the adoptive parents from anybody ever coming to interfere with their newly created family.
And this was happening at a profound scale across the United States. How common was it? And what was happening in the culture of our country at that time?
Oh, that's a really great question. The sexual revolution was simmering in the years after the war. We don't really think about it then because it's, you know, sort of tacked on to the late 1960s. But after the war, soldiers were coming home having not been celibate during their service. They were unlikely to want to be celibate with their stateside girlfriends. The culture itself was shifting dramatically. There was a new middle class that was exploding in the suburbs, and for the first time, young kids had privacy that they had never had before. They had rec rooms and their own suburban bedrooms, and really, pretty importantly, the backseat of the family Buick. So the rate of unwed pregnancies skyrocketed between 1946 and the late 1960s. And there was no abortion. That was illegal. There was no birth control, even for married couples in some states until the late 1960s. And there was certainly no sex education. So all of those factors combined to lead to about 3.5 million young women getting pregnant out of wedlock.
Wow. Well, can I tell you something?
Yes.
My mother was one of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I got a phone call from her 2.5 years ago, and she asked me if I was sitting down because I had a half-sister that was born in 1970 that few people in the world had ever known about. And she told me that she went to a home to have a baby, just like Margaret did. And even last night when I was talking to her about it, 50 years later, when she told me about the day that she left her baby at the hospital, she was crying. I mean, her pain through this process was so incredibly deep all these years later. And I just wonder what you think the impact of all those years of secrecy are when you think about the women that you've spoken with.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'm really moved by it. And when I heard the story about Margaret and David, and it's so interesting because David himself, when he told me that he had found his birth mother, that was the first thing he asked me, "Are you sitting down? I found my birth mother." And it only happened because he had taken a DNA test that his wife had given him for his birthday. And
the same thing happened in my family. That is exactly how my mother found her daughter.
And when he first told me, and I think maybe, I'm sure your mother, you know, might feel this way as well, but he sort of had this faraway look in his eyes and as if, well, she probably doesn't think about me or maybe even remember me. And I just thought to myself, well, that's impossible. And I was absolutely convinced that somewhere David Rosenberg's mother was profoundly, daily thinking about him, wondering about his well-being, his health, what his life had turned out to be like. And it turned out that I was right.
She had been looking.
Yeah, she had been looking. She had doggedly, indefatigably left medical records. Once she and George had gotten married and she thought that this information was reaching him.
That was an excerpt of my conversation with author Gabrielle Glazer about her book, American Baby. And after it aired, we were flooded with responses from listeners who were placed in closed adoptions and had searched for their own birth parents. A man named York told us that he'd recently gotten an email from his birth mother. He asked us not to use his full name because not everyone in his family was aware of the story.
She says she's been looking for me her whole life. It's been wonderful. It's so bizarre. We are finding that we're ridiculously alike. We literally have the same truck. We have the same burgundy Toyota truck. I mean, that is crazy. It's just that feeling like this is my person, you know?
Before all this, York had done a DNA test that turned up one relative on his birth mother's side. So he sent her a message.
I'm looking for my biological mother. She would be related to you. You're my closest blood relative I've ever found. Do you know anyone who was 15 years old in 1968 and gave a child up for adoption in Southern California? And it could have been a family secret. And immediately she's just like, sorry, that's not ringing a bell. But then this woman had gone ahead and forwarded my email. And then it went to this one cousin and she immediately sent it to her sister because she knew. And that was all it took. Just steel yourself for whatever you find. Hope for joy, be prepared for catastrophe. But in the end, in your life, it's so much better to know than not know.
Cheryl DeVries hasn't had as much luck.
Having moved back to the Seattle area where I was born, I did search for my biological mom. I went through all kinds of scenarios, like maybe she wouldn't be alive. Actually, that was the worst scenario I could think of. I never, ever thought she wouldn't want to know who I was. And that was a huge hurt to have that be what happened.
Cheryl hasn't given up hope. She's also submitted DNA samples with Ancestry and 23andMe. So far, no leads.
I think there's a part of me that just needs to see and smell and say some words and hear that story to feel somewhat satisfied. I don't, you know, and I just have such a big feeling of wanting to say thank you. It can't have been easy for her either.
And then there's the story of Joan Griffin. She told us her birth mother called out of nowhere one day. They kept in touch for years, but ended up having a falling out over politics. Her birth mother ended the relationship. Then about a decade later, in 2019, Joan did a DNA test and found a close connection on her birth father's side.
And I crossed all my fingers. How is this going to work out? And it has been absolutely delightful. So for a year and a few months, I have been in like almost weekly contact with three brand new siblings. It's been an emotional roller coaster both times. I was young, a young mom myself when my birth mother entered my life and she came on really strong. It was initially very difficult and then became very good and valuable. And then it kind of went down the drain. Whereas this second one, because we're all older, and I think the silver lining of the pandemic has been that we've been forced to take it really slowly. And it feels very different. Feels very warm and inviting and inclusive.
And if you are still searching for answers about your family history this holiday season, we wish you peace and comfort.